Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Monday, February 17th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about Scott Derrickson's new movie, The Gorge, and we'll present interviews with Derrickson and screenwriter Zach Dean. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at SlashFilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Jacob Hall.
Hello, hello.
Jacob, we got to talk about The Gorge. How do you want to do this? Do you want to talk spoilers just right off the bat, or do you think we can do some...
Let's let our opinions be known in the film and let people see if they want to watch it first, and then we can slide the spoilers in a few minutes.
Okay. So my reaction to this movie is so complicated because it was like every couple minutes I was being whipped back and forth between like, oh, this is really rad, and oh my god, this is the dumbest thing that I've ever seen in my life. So I think ultimately I ended up liking it. I think I'm positive on The Gorge overall, although I will just say it has some incredibly stupid stuff in it. But I think the design elements, which we'll talk about in spoilers, and just the general tone and maybe some of the lead performance stuff pulled me over onto the right side of The Gorge, as it were. So what did you make of this movie?
Full disclosure, just so I can clear my butt on this, I am friendly with some people who worked in this film. People I've known for a long time have some roles in the making of this movie. That's why I didn't do any reviews. I did the interviews. So you can take this however you want. I think The Gorge is pretty good. I had a good time with it. I enjoyed it. I agree with you that it's a far sillier film than I was expecting. For those of you who don't know, this is a new Scott Derrickson film, a horror sci-fi romance about two snipers from different nations, Russia and America, stationed across this giant gorge in an unknown country where they essentially need to guard it against something getting out. And that's the big something is the driving course of the movie. And naturally, these two snipers fall in love, and it has these romantic elements playing against the backdrop of the sci-fi horror. With that said, I guess it's safe to say that I really enjoyed the romantic elements of this movie, Ben. I think that Anya Taylor-Joy and Miles Teller are quite engaging. I was invested in their relationship. Whereas I thought that the action, horror, sci-fi elements were entertaining, but felt dumb is a mean word, but maybe a little dumb.
Yeah, it's super dumb. Like there's a lot of it is recycling things that we've seen a million other times in different sci-fi movies and stuff like that. But there are also a few interesting new fresh spins that they put on some of those ideas. So it's not like I could write the whole thing off as just being like a lazy recycling of previous notions. You know, there's a little bit more going on here than originally meets the eye. So I actually was surprised at how much, I mean, it's not Casablanca, right? Like, I don't want to oversell it, but the romance between those two leads, I think actually does work on a basic level. Like by the time it gets to the very end of the movie, which I'm not going to spoil here, even when we get into spoilers, but by the time it gets to the very end, it gets a little bit more, human and grounded, and I think maybe that relationship works less when there's not the heightened stakes of like, what is this crazy thing that they're guarding, and you know, they're learning about each other in this long distance capacity, looking at each other across this giant chasm with their sniper scopes and like writing notes to each other and all that kind of stuff. Like, for characters who don't physically speak for a good portion of the movie, I think they did a good job creating a foundation where it's believable that a relationship could form there. You know, on paper, taking the 30,000 foot view of the premise of this movie, it just seems really silly. And it is a very silly movie, but there's something about those performances that grounded me in and made me believe it, you know? So I think that goes a long way in a movie like this. So shout out to Miles Teller and Anya Taylor-Joy for that.
Yeah, I guess my issue is that I'm trying to find a way to say this politely because I know some people. People I know will listen to this and text me later and say, "Man," but I just wish this movie was smaller. I wish it was about the romance above the gorge, because the more I learned about the gorge, the less interested I was in the gorge.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so I think that's a good segue into full spoilers, because there are some things that we got to talk about. All right, so if you've not seen the movie, this is your last chance. I'm going to give you just a second to jump over to your phone or whatever and press pause. The Gorge is on Apple TV Plus. I don't think we said that. You can watch it right now. It's streaming right now. So if you are a subscriber, go check it out and then come back and listen. Yeah, so the idea of like these guys who are, you know, whatever, Civil War era soldiers riding horse, like ghost horses through the bottom of the chasm, like all of that stuff is so deeply, deeply silly. And I, those moments, I was like, come on. Like, I know that this is supposed to be a high concept sci-fi thing, but like, it's just so dumb, Jacob. It's so dumb. But then there will be something like these skull spiders where like the design of these creatures, which yes, you could say it's just the movie Annihilation but hopped up on energy drinks or something like that, right? And I think that's a valid description of the movie, but I loved Annihilation and I like an energy drink every now and again, so I think there's something to that particular combination that we haven't quite seen before. But yeah, those skull spiders, man, like that is something that is going to stick with me all the way through this year. Like I suspect I might nominate that as a moment for the 2025 best movie moments or whatever, just because it was so unexpected and the design was so cool. So what'd you make of like that kind of stuff once we actually get down into the gorge, whatever it is, halfway through the movie?
Yeah, I remain very mixed on the humanoid creatures in the gorge. Like you said, the horseback riding soldiers from across various eras are just, they didn't do it for me on a design level. They just they weren't my favorite, but I liked other creatures in the gorge. I love the skull spiders. I love the weird goo things across the bridge, which was just a real unpleasant body horror thing happening. And I love the weird Venus flytrap that Miles Teller gets trapped in at one point.
Oh, yeah.
But my main issue with the gorge itself is the big reveal that the movie treats as a giant surprise that it's all a government project gone wrong takes the air out of the movie. I was so much more intrigued by the gorge when it was a seemingly supernatural threat, that when the big reveal is, oh yeah, just government, just made me go, oh, I've seen this movie before. I'm not as excited about these monsters now that I know it's just government experiment gone awry, complete with exposition film found and played by the characters. I just wish it was more mysterious. I wish we knew less. I wish it was like, when somebody says it's a gateway to hell, I wish they were being literal, Ben. I know Scott Derrickson's penchant for like religious horror, I kind of wish he had leaned into that instead.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, as soon as you get Sigourney Weaver as like this head of a mysterious corporation, and the fact that Miles Teller and Anya Taylor-Joy are like down there looking at still functioning computers with like, does the gorge get Wi-Fi? Like, how does that work? And like, you know, there's a lot of the details of this movie that I just kind of rolled my eyes at, but tonally and like overall the vibes wise I had a really good time with it. I also, one thing I wanted to shout out is like the aesthetic of the gorge and the color palette that happens when you go down there. Like suddenly the sky is all purple and like it doesn't really make sense, but it looks really cool, I thought. And another thing about the movie that I'm kind of baffled by is like some stuff down there looks amazing, like visual effects wise it looks incredible, and then other things it just looks like they're literally standing in front of a green screen and it's like the worst CG that I've ever seen, you know, and it's like sometimes it's within the same scene where that will be the case. So the movie is really all over the place. And like I said, I kind of got like a case of cinematic whiplash watching it. But I do think overall, I ended up enjoying mostly what this movie had going for it. So
if you like the better Resident Evil movies, then you're all about the gorge.
Which Resident Evils?
The better ones.
Oh, the better ones. Okay, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think that's right. Okay, any closing thoughts before we get to your interviews? Because you had some meaty chats with these folks.
Yeah, Like I said, this movie is really entertaining. I feel like we dwelled more on the negative elements here. But I do think this is a fun movie. And I do think that what works really works. And there's some really cool action beats. There's one involving a Jeep on the side of a cliff that I thought was really well staged and really cool. I wish I sound like such an asshole thing to say. I'm curious about the A24 version of this movie, Ben, that takes place entirely above the gorge, where we very rarely see any creatures or monsters, and the focus is on the dread and tension of the waiting as these two characters get to know each other. I'm wondering if that's the better version of the gorge and the one I would have preferred to see, because it really does go full Resident Evil, full Fast and Furious, full big, bombastic, silly action. But my favorite stuff was when it wasn't doing that. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just a snob.
No, I know what you're talking about, and that would be a very interesting movie. But I think the charm of the gorge is that it does go full creature and like full ridiculous at certain points. And I think that Fast and Furious thing, I didn't think about that franchise once when I watched the movie, but the idea that you just evoked its name right now, I see why you did that in retrospect, because I think there is a little bit of that sort of cheesy sincerity that comes in those movies that I really connect to. And there's something about the gorge that it's not as overt, you know, that there's no Vin Diesel talking about family scenes in the gorge or anything like that. But I think there is something to even the action scenes where they're portrayed in such a way where there's a sincerity to them. And I know that sounds maybe like a weird thing to talk about when it comes to action, but a lot of modern action movies kind of keep you at a remove, and like you can almost feel the filmmakers being like, look how cool this is, like check out this camera move. And the gorge is not like that at all. It's very much like character driven, makes it sound like that A24 version of the movie that you're talking about, but it is very like it knows what it's doing, and it is not overly concerned with showing off or being flashy. And I think that really benefits it when it comes to the action. So, yeah, really goofy movie, capital G goofy. And I say that in a positive way overall. So, all right, let's get into your interviews here. Let's kick things off with your discussion with screenwriter Zach Dean.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
So I want to talk some nuts and bolts, like process stuff. I'm wondering how, as a writer, I know this is like the cliche question is, where do you get your ideas? But like generally, are you the kind of writer who has an image first, and you build around that image, or do you have a character or a story? Like, what is your nuts and bolts, I have an idea, let's roll with it process look like?
That's a good question. It isn't always the same. It depends on kind of, I have a lot of sort of an idea vault, which I'll get a lot of ideas and I'll keep them in there, and then I'll check on it every once in a while and see which ones are ready to tell and which ones need to sort of incubate longer. So there's that for sure. I can tell you that this particular film, I'll give you like a little bit of context because it'll help kind of like make sense of all of it.
Right.
So it was like, I wrote this between April of 2020 and September of 2020. It was kind of like, as you know, because you lived it too, like it was the beginning of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. People were on like lockdown like crazy. Nobody knew when it was going to be over, if it was going to, or how bad it was going to get. And now I think years later, we kind of like gloss over it and, you know, it didn't feel like as much, but at the time it was actually pretty scary. And my industry shut down, like production all over the world just stopped, and no one knew when we were going to make movies again. And no one knew how we were going to kind of like, you know, live and do what we do. So I definitely freaked out a little bit like everyone else. And then I was like, well, the one thing I can do, one thing I know I have control over, which is the thing that I've always been able to do, which is I can write original stories. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'll do in this next couple months, because I didn't know what else I could do. But I figured that at the end of the day, people are going to need to be entertained, right? Because people had a lot of time on their hands, man, to think about things they didn't want to think about. So I ended up writing three original scripts between April and September that year, which is like probably the silver lining was probably one of the most prolific periods of my life. And the value for me processing my own fears and anxiety, the process of writing was like awesome. Like it really made a big difference for me. Mm-hmm. And The Gorge was the second of the three. So the story is the first one I was wrapping up, like I was almost done with it, and I was starting to get anxious because I didn't want to be done writing because I felt like I was really in the zone and I was really edge was really good and I didn't want to lose it.
Right.
And I was almost sure for some reason, like if I even took a week off, I was going to lose it. I was like riding a wave. Right. So I went out to my office one night and I had these big dry erase boards in my office. And I literally, like, I was like, what am I going to write next? Like, I didn't want to stop. Right. Mm-hmm. And I remember the night I was out there, I literally drew it. Like I drew the gorge on the dry erase board and I put a tower here and a tower over there. And I put a little male symbol here and a little female symbol there. And I put fog in the bottom of the gorge. Like, I don't know what's down there. And then at the bottom, I wrote, they're snipers. It's a love story. and then I like had a margarita and went to bed. And the next morning I like came out to my office and I like stared at it. And I was like, does this work? And I was like, it does. Like, it just worked. And so it's not always like this for me. But that particular film, it was as if the process of writing, it was as if the story revealed itself to me in unexpected ways every day at the keyboard. Mm. Like it wasn't effortless, but it was fascinating for me to write it because it was as much me writing it as if I was watching the movie play out in front of my eyes. So, and it's not always like that. Sometimes it's super hard and like you get in a knot and you can't figure out how to solve something. But this one wasn't like that at all. I knew very much what it was about. And it was sort of inspired, I guess, subconsciously or consciously by, there was this, you know, these people, two people that are alone in the world, right? That no one gets, or the one person that gets her is about to die, your father. So there are two people that are kind of very dangerous, very fascinating, but very broken people who are totally alone, who are suddenly put out to pasture on this mission, who suddenly recognize that there actually might be one person in the world that does get them, but they're across that gorge. I can't get to them. Like, I can't touch them. I can't like communicate with them. And that's what I felt like with so many people at that point. Like I couldn't see like my family. They weren't like, way, like you couldn't go anywhere. You couldn't even touch people, all that stuff. So, and then between them was this vast unknown. Like this, we knew it was bad. We knew it was horrible, whatever it was. We didn't know exactly what it was, but we knew it was really bad. And so it's very much about sort of like love versus in facing the unknown. And with love, you know, like it's kind of about these two people. And the reason why it sort of deviates a little bit from a classic structure where it's like normally you would see them go in the gorge at the end of the first act.
Right.
In this version, we push till almost late second act because I wanted to have time to cultivate the actual relationship between two of them. Mm-hmm. So when he does fall in, there's not a minute where you doubt the fact that she won't go in after him. Mm-hmm. Just know it. She's like, because in some ways they're kind of lost without each other at that point. And so to go into that unknown together, you know, we're all going to end up going in the unknown at some point. Right. So, so like that sense still kind of raises the hair on my arms when I see her go in, you know? So it's sort of like, that was very much what it was about in terms. So if you say it came from an image or whatever, nuts and bolts, like, that was the nuts and bolts on that one. And I think philosophically, or not philosophically, but sort of like conceptually, I was also thinking about, so I only met Sidney Pollack, the director and actor once, but he was a really brilliant guy. And he really knew love stories. And he once said, a love story is only as good as what keeps them apart. So I thought a lot about that, you know, in that thing. So the development of that was sort of the slow burn of their courtship was really important to making the big turn. So when they go into the unknown together, it's like, at least from my perspective, you love them and you want them, and you know why they're in there together and you know why they're fighting for each other. And I think it matters more. So to give a little extra time to that. So that was sort of the conceptual of all of it. And I knew all along, I knew that's what I wanted to do. Like, cause that's what, you know, you had to dive into the fear, right? At that point, right? You had to figure it out. Yeah. So that was what it was about.
Yeah, it's so interesting that you talk about the love story being the visual image, because so much of the film's effectiveness is the fact that you buy the relationship before the monsters show up. So when you're writing this love story, you're at a disadvantage. They can't talk normally. You got to communicate via the dry erase board and the pen and paper. So on the paper, like if you want to write a screenplay, we're convincing people with money, hey, this is a relationship worth celebrating and a relationship that actors will want to play. What do you put into your prose to sell the dynamics of wordless relationships like this? I'm curious about the craft of that.
I mean, again, this is one where you have to know the form well enough to like forget it. Like I've done this long enough that like I know when I'm deviating from classic form and you still know how to stick to landing most of the time. So in this one, I wanted to pare back, like they took the tech away, like all you took that away because I wanted to tell this, and there aren't very many characters. Like I really wanted it to be a really like slow burn courtship. And I guess, I mean, how it looks like on the page doesn't, I mean, I probably just, you know, did it however you'd imagine doing it, but it's, but it's more like, it's when you reveal the pieces and there's sort of like this sort of slow back and forth courtship between the two of them. And then I would say that, and it's, they do a nice job in the trailer, but the idea that like, her first big move is to, you know, is to like bring up the stakes. Like this is who I am. And that's what's, he feels like, well, she's not like, she's actually like me. Like, I feel like the fact that she shoots the thing off the railing to get his attention when he kind of like, is like, it's the most, it's not arousing, but it's like the thing where like, oh, she's legit. She's like me. And I think that's sort of like those things. And then the slow of like the playing chess and in the snow and like the holidays going by and all those things. I think in some ways to keep them apart builds our desire for them to be together, obviously. But I feel like that, it felt like the most natural thing in the world to do. It felt easy, I guess, which isn't helpful for me to answer your question. But at the time, like I said, it really revealed itself every day at the keyboard to me in surprising ways that I'd let it go. And for whatever reason, it felt, the story really told itself to me as it went. So, mm-hmm. And it's so, not like it was.
So we have this great love story. We have the literal little gorge dividing them. So mm-hmm. At what point in this process do you realize, okay, there are monsters?
Oh, I knew all along. And that's the great thing about the movies is that, which is so awesome, is you can put a face on your fear, you know, mm-hmm. like whatever that is. Like I've done it in other movies. Like you can kind of like, you can take this unknown thing and you can make a physical manifestation of it. And so I knew they had to go into the unknown. Like they had to go into the fear. I knew that was always going to be there. And to slow tease it out, which is just, that's just classic. You don't want to give too much away too early. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It felt very natural, honestly, to do it that way. Mm-hmm.
So some of the monsters, though, we have a big variety. We have the more humanoid looking ones who try to scale the gorge. We have the people I've spoken to who've seen the film are in love with the skull spiders. It's all they want to talk about. So I'm curious, in your script, how much detail went into like saying this monster looks like this, this monster acts like that, or how much that was on the page for people to read?
Well, I have to answer that in two ways. And it's a good question. So I'm not in any way trying to shut down the question. I'm saying it's a good question. I'm not supposed to talk about the gorge very much. What's in there. It's just sort of like, because it's pre-release, I'm not supposed
okay.
to. That being said, a lot of it was in the script. And I would say, the majority was in the script, but also the artistry of Scott and the creature designers and the production designers, all those things. Like that's when you get, that's the huge win of having such incredible artists want to take over the blueprint of what you've created and then bring it to life with their own artistry. So, I mean, honestly, like them being able to have that cast, you know, those two were like two of the finest actors of their generation, right? To get them was like mind blowing. Like I couldn't have cast it better. If someone had said, who in your greatest dream do you want his fame? I mean, literally, I couldn't have a better Levi and better Dross than those two. Scott's fantastic. So I feel like I'm still sort of in awe about how well I feel like the pieces fell together for that. So I would say that a lot of that stuff down there is certainly the product of the script, but it's also the product of just amazing like creature design artists and Scott's vision to push it and all that stuff. So it's a build, it's a real collaboration, honestly.
So speaking of Scott's involvement, I'm curious, was there a moment or a scene, without getting into spoilers, we can keep it vague, where you watched and said, oh, this was not a moment that maybe was my personal favorite on the page, but now that I've seen it executed, this is now a moment that sings. Like, is it, what was a change or a scene that was developed in a way that really pleased you when you saw how it was executed?
I mean, probably, honestly, I mean, and there's so much I love about this movie, okay? But I think the things that I liked, the parts that absolutely light me up in more than probably anything is honestly the courtship sequence, which is obviously not, some people will react to different parts of this movie, but the chemistry and how that played out, both direction and the performances of the two of them, made me just sing, like just so like, oh my God. I love it. And again, for me, when he falls and she like grabs the weaponry and then just leaps in, like that is just like, I just love that. Like, I love that moment where you're like, this is when this whole thing is going to turn inside out. Like, does the movie we're watching is now taking a turn. And that's what I love about movies. And that's why, like, and I think that there's, in all the forums out there right now, like television is doing amazing things. They're doing some of the best television ever in the stage. Like, I love live theater, but movies are my form because I love the moment when you turn the whole thing inside out and you're like, oh my God, where are we going now? And that's how you know it's a movie and not a different format. Mm-hmm. And that's the scene where this is a movie, man.
Yeah, and one of the niches you're carving out for yourself as a writer is these large, conceptually ambitious science fiction movies that aren't based on existing properties. I know franchise is a word that gets tossed around every breath in both of our industries these days. And I'm wondering, how difficult is it to get a movie like this made where it doesn't have, you know, a pre-existing, God, I hate this word, IP attached to it?
I mean, honestly, it's a great question, and I would say that it's hard. But I have been I'm really grateful that I've been successful at it. I would say that it's, I mean, I would say that I would encourage everyone who's out there who's working on original stuff to not get wrapped up in what they think the market wants or whatever they think, and just write your original stuff the way you want it. Write it as if the move that you want to see, man. Like, I really encourage people to do original stuff as much as possible and to do it the way they would want to do it and not get in their head about how do I sell it? What does the world want of this thing? Because I feel like that, for me, the process of writing this movie at the time when I wrote it, again, I could have never sold this thing and it was invaluable to me because it helped me deal with the fear I was dealing with. And that's what it should be for, that's what original stuff does for whoever, you know, whether you're working as an amateur or whether you're, you know, you've had tons of movies made. And I believe that it's particularly with all these new places where you can get stuff made and there's a new home for all these different kinds of films, that there's more and more of a market for that. So I think that people like, I'm not like, I'm just theatrical or just whatever. I love all of it, man. I love all of it because there was a period of time when you couldn't even, some of the movies, the types of movies that I grew up with, you couldn't make them for, because the industry had constricted to such a point where you couldn't make certain kinds of movies for 15 years. Mm-hmm. Then when these other ways of showing movies up, they showed up and they suddenly had a new home for all these stories that I loved. So, I mean, I'm a storyteller, dude, and it's like, it's kind of like with music. Like, I don't like particular movies. I just love music. And it's like, I like movies and I like all kinds of movies. And I love the fact that there's a window for this. So if you're out there writing your original thing, like, I believe there's a whole bunch of people out there that will be like you and like it. So I really encourage people to like write your thing, man, like finish it, finish your script and get it out there. And I don't think, I'm not saying it's easy. I know it's super hard. And it took me 30 years, you know, before I got my first movie made, my first original movie. But it's doable and it's awesome to do it. And it's like, it's kind of what it's about. And even if you don't, again, even if you don't sell it right away, it has a great value as an artist. Cause that's at the end of the day, that's what you're trying to do, is you're trying to tell stories. It'll just heal you. It'll make you feel better when you're doing it. It'll help you process your life. So that sounds a little heady, but it's true for me.
No, I get that entirely. Can you talk about what you're working on right now? I mean, do you want to keep on working in the science fiction space, or like what can you share about what you want to write next?
So one of the other movies I wrote during the same period is a movie called Day Drinker. So that's going to production in April in Spain. And I'm really excited about that too. So I'm doing some rewrites on that right now for production. And then I'm writing another spec right now, which is an original. And then and I'm working on the fast stuff.
Now, can you share at all what that experience has been like? Because I know that that franchise is such a sprawling, strange beast, and one that I admire a great deal. But also, I'm so curious about what conversations happen into making a fast movie.
A lot of them. honestly, I like, it's so different. It couldn't be more different from what I do original stuff, but I kind of love it too. Like I love the people involved are really fascinating, cool people. And they're all like really talented. And like, and it's, I mean, to be part of something that's that, it's 25 years, man. It's like going to be 11 films. So whatever I can do to contribute and help put that together, like I'm into it. You know, it's very different and it almost uses a different part of your brain, but it's also at the same time, like it's a really cool challenge. And I love that. From my perspective, the thing that I have to bring to that, along with all the action, all that stuff, is to bring in a sense of emotional arc of completion of these people. You've been riding this ride for decades. You know, people started on this ride when they were a kid and now they're like have kids, you know, like you have to land that in a way that feels emotionally satisfying as well as, you know, plot satisfying. And I think that's the thing that I'm the biggest advocate for in all that.
Great. Well, I appreciate your time today. Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to watching the movie again and hope you have a great day.
Thanks, man.
All right. And here's Jacob's chat with director Scott Derrickson.
Hi, Scott. How are you doing today?
Good, Jacob. How are you?
I'm doing great. I watched the movie, had a great time with it. And I guess my initial question would be, having interviewed you before and spoken to you before, I know that you have a very specific way in your movies. You always are searching for that, like a real connection to the material. And since you usually are, you know, credited as a writer on the script or originating the idea at the very least, what about Zach Dean's initial script when it hit your lap, like said, I've got to make this movie?
Well, it was two things. In terms of the personal connection, you're right. If I don't feel a real connectivity of the story of a particular movie as it connects to my life at that time, I probably shouldn't make it. And when I received the script for the first time from Skydance, in the few years before that, I had fallen in love and gotten remarried. And so the romance of the movie was really, really spoke to me. I thought it was an interesting, unique kind of love story and romance story. Two people fighting hard to be together, you know? And I also was just as a film viewer, frankly, more than a filmmaker, was really interested in thinking more about genre, what makes different genres what they are, the categories by which we, you know, put our films in. What makes a comedy, what makes a horror film, what makes an action film. I was thinking about those things, and then here's the script that's blending like six or seven genres at once. You know, it's romance, it's sci-fi, it's action, it's horror, it's political thriller, and doing it kind of effortlessly. And I just thought something about that was so unique. And I guess the last thing I'll say, the fact that Skydance was giving it to me, putting up a huge budget for it, wasn't a sequel, wasn't a franchise film, wasn't IP, original story. And I just thought, boy, this is the kind of big budget movie I want to see. So that all those were reasons why I felt very drawn to make it.
Yeah, I really love the stuff above the gorge. I was really drawn to the communicating with the whiteboard
and the way they flirt from across giant monster filled chasm. So when you have such little dialogue and characters who literally can't speak to each other until like large chunks of the movie, as a filmmaker working with these actors, how do you sell the flirtation and the romance when they literally can't be in the same room?
It's very challenging, and you have to stay visually interesting, and you have to ellipse and shoot in such a way that you can't ellipse all the dull parts. You can't have them write out every message and take all the time to spend a lot, you know, look at everything through the binoculars. It was just a very tricky thing to pull off technically, but the heart and soul of all of that, you just have to ask your actors to trust you. And that I would say to Anya, this is what I shot with Miles on Tuesday. He did this. It feels like this. You know, I think your reaction is in this world. And then let them be creative with that. And they both of them were constantly making, they're such good actors. Both of them were always doing things a little better, if not a lot better, than what I was even directing them to do. You know, they just made interesting choices. And I remember in that section, you know, there's one little moment when Anya, when he says, holds up the card about, I don't want to get a spoiler, but the last card that he holds up, I'll say that. And she sort of drops her head onto the binoculars. And she just did that in the take. And I was like, oh, that's so beautiful. So I did a little push in on it and adjusted the shot for it. But they were always making interesting creative choices. And I think that they're to be credited with all that magic, you know? Mm-hmm.
So this could be a question where I'm buried up my own butt. So tell me if I am. But talking to Zach right before you, he talked about, you know, he wrote this as a love story first, and the monsters kind of were added in, filled in the gaps, like after he realized it was going to be a love story. So as you look at these love story between these characters, one American, one Russian, are we allowed to read this as a political commentary? Are you trying to make a grander message, or are you just happy for it to be a love story?
I mean, I think that it's a love story first and foremost. I think that there's different arches of rainbows. You know, the overarching umbrella over, or a rainbow over all of them is the romance and the love story. But I think that the political commentary that's layered in there, and how much of this was intentional and how much it was not, you know, does have something to do with the state of the world and the secrecy and the covertness and the corporate power structures and their influence on government, on things like defense. Those are all very timely subjects, increasingly important. Every month now they become more important. And I thought that was one of the elegant things about the script, was that it's a monster movie, it's a creature movie, it's a sci-fi thriller, it's a romance, blah, 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 but it also has this political significance in what it's addressing. And it all seems very integrated and very pure at the same time.
Yeah. So I know you probably don't want to talk major spoilers, so we'll dance around some of the details here, but I would love to hear about some of your inspirations for when we do see Inside the Gorge, because I don't think it's a spoiler to say that as a film fan, my major reaction was, oh, this feels like an updated version of the spider pit from King Kong, but with some new nasty surprises. So I'm wondering, like, what were some of the inspirations you had for the look of the interior of the gorge and some of the things that are found within it?
I hadn't thought directly about the King Kong reference. That's probably a subconscious pull for me, because as soon as you said that, I was like, oh, I think that maybe that's where I got that. I think that we just wanted a mythology that was unique. You know, that's I did a lot of rewriting in that section of the movie to make it original. I didn't want it to just be zombies. I wanted it to be, at least have some things in there that you hadn't seen before. But the look of it was very inspired by, by like Italian horror cinema, the, you know, Bava and Argento, and the colored atmosphere, the audacity of the look of the colorful spaces. And for that not to just be there for aesthetic purposes, but it has a story relevance, you know, why the different colors are what they are inside the gorge. And also folk horror. You know, the tradition of folk horror, there's so much old folklore and folk horror about plant people, stick people, you know, animated trees, the hybrids of that sort, and that have not been treated as a regular staple in horror cinema. And I thought that was an interesting direction to explore because it's not so familiar.
Yeah, I want to ask you about the color palette of the Gorge versus, because you have a very natural look when we're up with the actors on their towers, but it goes full Suspiria in some of the color choices when we're down there.
Yeah, for sure. That was very intentional. But again, I was only willing to do that if the presence of that color had reason for being there, which it does. And that's part of the unfolding mystery of what that place really is.
Yeah. Even though you've directed action in movies before, I think it's safe to say this is the first one of your films I would define as an action movie. I mean, Doctor Strange has action in it, but this straight up has long sequences of extended, you know, gunfire and excitement and chasing and not to spoil anything, but a great scene involving a Jeep. Did you feel the challenge of trying to stage action on a bigger scale than you have before?
I felt confident when I was doing. The challenge wasn't in how to do it. The challenge was in how much work it would be to get it done, because there's so many of those different set pieces in it. And the preparation process was pretty grueling to get it all done on a schedule that, you know, didn't turn it into an outrageously expensive film. So it was a lot of hard, steady work. It was like running in front of a train, you know, trying to hit every railroad tie so the train doesn't run you over. So that was challenging.
I guess I'm almost out of time. So I think my last question would be, the first filmmaker I've talked to who's made a major film for Apple. I'm wondering, that was the Skydance production as well, but I'm wondering, like, how does Apple and Skydance and that partnership compare to, you know, Blumhouse, Marvel, the places you worked before? I would love to know how they, as a streamer, how they feel differently or the same.
Well, I dealt mostly with Skydance. You know, I talked to Apple on occasion. They were very supportive. They would sometimes give notes and interact, but not too much. Certainly not in any intrusive way. My filmmaking partners on the movie with Skydance was David Ellison and Dana Goldberg and Don Granger. And they're amazing people. They're real cinephiles. They love movies. They're super smart and creative. And I really made the movie with them. And it was an enriching experience.
All right. Well, I'm out of time. Thank you so much. Hope the rest of your day goes great.
Thank you.
All right, Jacob, before we go, any closing thoughts on this movie that we didn't have a chance to talk about earlier?
No. Once again, how do I say this politely? I do not mean it as an insult, but it could come off as that. This movie is what it is in the tin. It doesn't really have deeper meanings. It doesn't really have anything really going on in a subtextual way that I found fascinating. It really is just two hot people fall in love and fight monsters. And that is a benefit to it, in that it's an extremely accessible, fun, goofy thing. But also, maybe I just want a little bit more. Maybe I want a little bit more from a filmmaking team who I know has delivered stuff that I think was, you know, richer, more interesting in the past. So worth seeing, a good time at the movies, or it was a good time in your living room. But I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, I'm looking forward to Black Phone too, which is where I think Derrickson's going to remind me of why I think he's one of the best working right now.
Excellent. All right. Well, that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about The Gorge at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.